We're back for another edition of the Half Court Press. Almost lost my voice in that intro. I don't know what's going on. John the Italian, Chris Hetty here to break down the college hoop scenes on a local level. Nebraska suffered its first bad loss of the season, and as expected, Twitter blew up, at least in the Husker world.
I mean, that
Twitter blew up.
That was bad.
On the other end of the spectrum, Creighton won and snapped its 4-game losing streak. And
was
now,
that on the same night, too?
It was, right.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty ironic.
Separated by like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
We should have done a podcast during the game, during the games, right after the game. The games? I don't know. So, what do you want to start? You want to start with the Jays?
I want to start with Creighton first. Right. Yeah.
Creighton beats Georgetown. Don't have the score in front of me. 91-87. The Jays found a way to get it done in the end. They're trailing by three with 3.5 minutes left or 3 minutes left, and outscored Georgetown 12-5 down the stretch. Actually, did it at the free throw line. The Jays in the final couple minutes were 8 of 7 from the free throw line. That includes 4 free throws by Mitch Ballack to seal the win. Tyshawn Alexander hit a big 3-pointer. On a loose ball that was then recovered and whipped around the perimeter and found Tyshawn Alexander, who was open, and he knocked it down at 6-3 of the day. That shot put Creighton ahead for good, and the Jays actually got some stops at the end, too. I mean, just everything that maybe hadn't been happening over the course of not just the last 4 games or the previous 4 games, really a large part of the season. We talked about their defense and just the inability to get key stops when they need it. Free throw shooting's been a problem, rebounding's been a problem, and yet it all sort of came together in those final 3 minutes, and Creighton found a way to win. I don't know if it changes things, but it certainly sort of keeps the higher than it would have been.
That was going to be my first question of like, all right, what's it mean? Because Georgetown's good, but they're not great, and now Creighton has Butler next, which is kind of funny because you can kind of complete this circle of like Butler was kind of when it kind of came off. I mean, that's kind of when the wheels started to really start
recently.
I
mean,
yeah, that's what started the kind of the 4-game losing streak. So like, what's the Georgetown win do, if anything? Does it say that Creighton has figured it out, or do they just play really well?
I mean, honestly, I feel like it was more about getting back on track and just feeling good about yourself. I think the players, you sort of sensed it from some of their comments afterward about, you know, needing to just feel good, celebrate a win. They got on the bus, and Jordan Scurry got a scholarship, a key walk-on contributor who brings energy and positivity every day. So there's just a lot. They were wearing those baby blue uniforms that looked pretty good.
Yeah,
you know,
they did.
So everything, Tyshawn Alexander, Davion Mintz were playing in front of their family. They all traveled up to D.C. from North Carolina to see them play. I mean, there was just... And they saw him get a win, you know, it's just a feel-good trip. And I think that's what they needed, given because I in their minds, they haven't really been that far off, even though the results haven't been there. They've lost games, but the players have kind of felt like we're getting better, but we just haven't seen the results. Part of that's because they're playing good teams. Part of that's because some of their flaws have been they've just been exploited by some of these teams. And it's going to – I don't know – if one win changes sort of the, it doesn't change the fact that Creighton still has these same flaws. You know,
right.
Creighton didn't suddenly wake up on Monday and find a way to fix everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Jays just found a way to win.
Yeah.
And you can make an argument that is a sign of progress because the Jays hadn't been finding ways to win. You know, Marquette, they found a way to lose that game. Villanova, they were ahead by 9 early in the second half and found a way to lose the game. Villanova did take it at one point, but Creighton was in position to maybe secure a victory in that game, didn't do it. At St. John's, they were ahead early in the first half, and St. John's hit him with a huge run and kind of took control of the game right before halftime and never relinquished it. But Creighton was in position at times before this, during the losing streak, to get a win and didn't, and then against Georgetown, you know, it made some plays. And so I guess that's something that I think is a positive for this team, and it does show growth. I agree with that, but you know, there's still questions about You know, can they match some of the opponent's physicality and length and size, especially when they're playing with their four-guard lineup? That seems to be their most efficient lineup offensively. So how do they do that? And, you know, can they maybe find some more, I don't know if it's consistency, because they shoot the ball really well, and they've only had three games where they haven't shot it well. But, like, can you find that guy who is able to be relied on when the tension rises and maybe your back is against the wall during a stretch during a game and you need to come up with a response? Have they found that piece yet?
I almost wonder if Creighton needs Tyshawn Alexander or Mitch Ballack to go for 25 each night. 20 or 25.
They would love that. Yeah.
Either of them, though.
But
I mean?
But I think it's just how, for me, it's how you get those 20 to 25. I mean, Tyshawn and Mitch will always hit threes. Like, and I guess I shouldn't say that.
Most
because
of the time.
They as shooters, you go up and down.
Yeah.
But over the long haul, they're going to hit threes. It's more about when they hit those threes and can they be, can they find a way to create offense for either themselves or others? I mean, making it, within this offense, a lot of times Coach McDermott will talk about it, is like he doesn't really want one guy thinking that he's got to make the big time play for this team. He just wants the ball to move, get the defense moving, and then when you see a lane to the bucket, you can attack it. You get a poor closeout coming at you, you can attack that. You get an open shot, you can take it. It just so happens that more times than not, Tyshawn Alexander and Mitch Ballack are the ones that have the ball in their hands or have the space to shoot it, have the confidence to take it. But I think you're seeing some more out of Davion Mintz. I mean, he made two big plays, maybe even three or four big plays offensively in the second half of the second half. He made a couple, three out of his four free throws during the final 3 minutes. So I think he's growing in confidence to be kind of that guy that can take advantage. Again, the way Creighton's formed, it just, I don't know. They haven't found, nor do they want to find, it seems like, the coaching staff and the players. Like they feel okay with the idea that they don't necessarily have a guy that they can lean on. But it does show up at times when, you know, it's funny because there was a moment when Georgetown was making a push, and I think Creighton made a run at the start of the second half and was ahead by five, six, seven points for a good stretch of the game, and then Georgetown started surging back, hit a three-pointer to come within three, and Creighton had an out-of-bounds play that it ran perfectly for Mitch Ballack to shoot a three, and he missed it, and then Georgetown hit a three, and it was tied, and it was like anybody's game from there. But, you know, there's moments like that for this team this year where Creighton's best play offensively is a three, an open three. But just the odds of you hitting that, I mean, an open three for Mitch Ballack, he's like a 45% three-point shooter, so I guess you could say an open three for him is 60, 65, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a good shot. It really is. And the analytics would love that shot, but like in the realm of college basketball where momentum and confidence can play such a big role, you know, you wish that Creighton had maybe another way to generate that run-stopping moment.
Oh, yeah.
And so...
And I think that compounds, too, for Creighton when things aren't going well and they're not making shots. And even if they make one three, say that, you know, Butler's going on a 10-0 run and Creighton stops it with a three and then they get a stop and then they miss a three and then they miss another three. And then it just compounds and then Butler can kind of run up the score again, you know? And so... It is interesting that's kind of the bread and butter. That's what you get when you live and die by the three, I think. It's like you get that momentum swing if you're shooting really well, but if you're not, then it can go really poorly.
Right. And again, they haven't shot it poorly in many games this year. Mm-hmm. It has worked. That idea that their system is working, especially with the group that they have. Because like I'm sitting here thinking, you know, it would be nice for Creighton if it had Marcus Foster was the prime example of a guy who he could get a shot in multi different levels and all over the court. You know, you could run a play for him and didn't necessarily know what was going to happen, but he would create a high percentage look for himself mm-hmm. because he was just that skilled. Like, they don't have that piece.
Yeah.
So I made, you know, that to me, it it's a little bit of a flaw, but to them, I think that they feel like they're maximizing what they have.
Yeah.
And for this team, you need to run stop and play. Let's draw up a baseline out of bounds play for our best shooter and give him an open look. He got it. He just didn't knock it down.
Yeah.
So that riding the wave of that is tough, but I thought that's one thing that Creighton did show against Georgetown, and maybe that's something they can replicate against Butler and going forward, is there will be stretches in games when those shots don't fall. You get a good look, and you don't hit it. And I feel like at times this year, this team, because they are confident shooters, and I think they also know how much the offense sort of runs what they do, if they execute a play on offense and it results in a miss, I think you see the heads drop or
yeah.
the shoulders slump
yeah.
a little bit, and the energy just isn't at the same level as it would be when they made it. So I think that was a good sign. And they've done it at times during this losing streak, but just haven't been able to maybe sustain it for 40. But to see Creighton sort of take some punches, you're on the road, you're not getting calls, you know, the you feel like you're getting a raw deal from the refs, and Georgetown starts making a push, and Georgetown, again, like I said, took the lead down the stretch. But for Creighton to keep fighting and keep sort of playing with that attack mode, you know, not settling for the first look they got, working the offense to create a better look, and again, just sort of fighting, I guess,
yeah.
for lack of a better term. I
yeah.
thought that they showed good fight against Georgetown, and
I'm curious to see how these next two games go.
I'm curious to see Friday, because when we talk about fight, that's what they were lacking at Butler.
Yeah.
And Butler had it. Butler needed it that day. And the Bulldogs brought a lot of tenacity defensively, kind of punched Creighton in the mouth a little bit. Creighton just sort of just stumbled and was staggering and turned the ball over, I forget what the number was, 9 or 10 times in the first half, and it led to 20 points for Butler, and it was ball game at halftime.
Mm-hmm.
And so that there are things that Butler does, because they have two guards in Aaron Thompson and Kamar Baldwin, who are long and good defenders. They're instinctive. They are really clever in terms of taking away space and beating you to a spot. Those guys can disrupt you a little bit, and they can sometimes dictate the flow of the game more so than you, because you know you want to get into your offense if you're Creighton and get some shots up and start rolling that way. But these guys, just the way they play, they can knock you off kilter a little bit, and they did that at Butler. So that's I'm curious about that for Creighton, just how it responds, where it's at mentally. But mm-hmm. I think being at home should help, and having the home crowd, it's a pink out. That's always a fun fun environment and fun day to sort of celebrate. The idea that you know, we're coming together to fight a disease, and I think a lot of people sort of they rally behind that, and the energy in the building is always up. So I would imagine that Creighton's going to bring it, but mm-hmm. but they didn't bring it against Butler, so I kind of have to wait and see.
Right. Speaking of a lack of fight, do you want to talk about Nebraska?
Oh boy, what happened, man? I Creighton playing at the same time as Nebraska.
Yeah.
And I turned the game off at almost to halftime, and Nebraska's up 13. And I'm thinking,
yes, you turned it on at the perfect spot.
Yeah. Now I will say Rutgers was really just handing the ball to Nebraska. Like,
oh yeah,
those turnovers were essentially here is the ball, you can have it, and then go dunk on that end, and then
It was like 10 or 11 in the first 10 minutes. It was bad. I mean, they're bad. I mean, like, here's the thing, right? Breaking news. Rutgers is a bad basketball team. They're not good.
Are they bad, though?
They're not
I don't
good.
Know. Bad? Yeah, they're not good.
Do you know that earlier this year they played Columbia University? Columbia University is currently 5-10. They went to overtime. Rutgers had to go to overtime to beat them. So they're not.
They beat
like,
Ohio State, though. I mean,
yeah,
like,
they did. But they also lost to, you know, Minnesota by a lot, mm-hmm. Northwestern by a lot. Like, this is a game that Nebraska shouldn't have lost.
Right. I don't want to make excuses because you can't really. But what happened?
Yeah.
Like, why did, I guess, to me, and I feel like most people who watched it would think that the key stretch was right before halftime, when it went from a potential blowout to suddenly, it's a game
it's
now.
It's a game, yeah.
What happened during that stretch? Why did Nebraska let Rutgers back into it?
Yeah, that stretch was, I think, it was really indicative of kind of the way Nebraska came out, where that was the best stretch they played right before the 15-0 run that Creighton or that Rutgers had. They were moving the ball, they were taking opportunities away from Rutgers. Basically, they actually played defense for the first time in the night, forcing Rutgers. Basically, they said, "All right, Geo Baker, we're going to make you beat us from the perimeter. Like, just make some shots. Like, we're going to make you do that." But in that stretch, they were keeping Geo Baker away from the ball, so it was like random guard beat us from the perimeter, and they'd be taking like fadeaway threes with like 2 seconds on the shot clock. Nebraska would get the long rebound and go in the transition and score, or get a three, or like they would actually make shots. So things were working really well. Nebraska goes up 13, and then they just kind of were like, "All right, cool, awesome, we're up 13," and then it just slowly dwindles down. And Rutgers basically, you have to give them credit. They fought. I mean, there's two things that Rutgers does well is they fight, they don't really give up, and they rebound. And they basically took those two things. There's a really funny, do you watch Parks and Rec at all?
Mm-hmm.
So there's Andy's like trying to get April back, and he's having a meeting with Chris Drager, and Chris is like, "Andy, what are you good at?" And he's like, "I'm nice." And he's like, "Nice." And he's like, "What else?" And he's like, "I'm in a band." He's like, "Band!" And then he's like, "What else?" And Andy's like, "That's it." Rutgers is tough, and they rebound, and they took those two things, and they won April's heart. That's basically what happened. And so, and Nebraska just didn't want to fight that night for whatever reason. Yeah. And it's going to be a black mark on the resume. And Ohio State, yeah, you know, Rutgers beat Ohio State, but Ohio State's also lost four in a row now. And so maybe Ohio State isn't as good as we maybe thought that they were, which is interesting for Creighton as well, because they probably, you know, whatever. So, yeah, now Nebraska's in this really weird spot where, for whatever reason, they took that Michigan State loss so hard that they thought about it. I mean, it clearly affected the Rutgers game, clearly impacted it.
Isn't that interesting? Because, and it might not just be Nebraska. I know that we're going to be speaking in the context of Nebraska because it's this podcast, but like, this year in college basketball, especially these major conferences, you look at these teams, you would think, okay, they took a loss. Now they're going to find a way to get it back on track the next game.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't. It's like right. Whatever flaw allowed them or led to them losing is still lingers into the next game. You know, you mentioned Ohio State. They lost four in a row. Indiana's now lost five in a row.
Yeah, man.
Texas Tech. Who looked?
They lost last night.
They lost three in a row.
Yeah.
And Kansas State was another team that was like reeling, and then suddenly now I think Kansas State's won five in a row.
Yeah. They're tied for first in the Big 12.
Iowa State went after beating Kansas. Kansas dropped two in a row.
Yeah.
In the SEC, I feel like Mississippi State, Auburn, Ole Miss, those teams are kind of in a bad stretch. Florida State in the ACC is on a bad. Like, there's these teams that a month ago, I would have said, or maybe even 3 weeks ago, I've been like, these are good teams, NCAA tournament contenders, and now suddenly they just have hit, they've stumbled.
Yeah.
And Nebraska's in this boat where they've stumbled to the point where like now there's concern of like, how do you fix it?
Right.
And is it a problem? Is it just the January blues?
Yeah.
Or is it something more long term?
Yeah, and I think that like this is a hard time for the season anyway. Like I feel like this is about time everyone gets tired, and everyone's figured everybody out for the most part, and so you can kind of scheme people up. And what's just so interesting to me is like Michigan State's extremely good. Like Michigan State is like a Final Four team, maybe if Cassius Winston can get them there. I don't like teams that have a lot of bigs that go to the Final Four, but they're extremely good, right?
Yeah,
probably
really
going to win the Big Ten.
You think so?
Yeah, I think that they can beat Michigan. We'll see, though. I don't know anything.
This week is going to be huge for Michigan State because they already beat Maryland.
Yeah,
and they got to go to Iowa, and I think somebody else at the end of the week that's tough. Go on.
But like to take that like it says a lot. It says that Nebraska expected to win that game, which says that they have total confidence in themselves, that they thought that they were as good as Michigan State. And two, it says a lot that they took that loss so hard that they couldn't get ready for Rutgers. Because that's basically what happened, is they weren't ready. I mean,
yeah,
they just weren't. And it's just, it's interesting because I think that this Nebraska team, they can turn it around. There's still plenty of time in the season to turn this around. And I say that they probably will because for whatever reason, big games, they show up to play. Creighton, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech. Well, Texas Tech, they kind of didn't. Well, the Texas Tech, they went up 13-4 to begin
to
the,
start
game.
The game.
Like
yeah.
they begin big games really well. Indiana, like they show up to fight. Seton Hall, they show up to fight for big games. But like Penn State, they looked bored. Rutgers, they didn't look like they really wanted to be there. Cal State Fullerton, they didn't look good. I mean, they were just basically there because they had to be. And now they won, but it was kind of gross. And so it's kind of this two sides of this Nebraska team where if they decide that they want to play hard, like Creighton, and die for every loose ball and just run teams out of the gym, they absolutely can. But if they show up and they're just kind of like, well, I'm kind of tired and I got some homework.
Yeah.
I guess I'll go play. Then what happened at Rutgers is going to happen more often. So this is kind of an interesting like fork in the road.
Right. And so I guess what I would say is that is an issue that everyone's dealing with.
Yeah.
I mean, like, how does Kansas lose to West Virginia?
Yeah.
West Virginia is not a good team.
Yeah.
They're winless in the Big 12, and then Kansas goes there and loses. So
And then I think the next game they won last night, right? They beat...
Who, West Virginia?
No, or KU. Kansas?
Yeah, beat Iowa State.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So how does that happen? You know, like right. there are puzzling. That's what this sport is. Nevada lost to New Mexico.
Right.
I mean, like you can point out maybe some flaws with Nevada.
Duke lost to Syracuse.
Yeah, Syracuse is weird though. But, yeah, and Syracuse lost to Old Dominion at home.
Right.
So transitive property. Yeah. Old Dominion beat Duke.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? No.
No.
You have to show up.
Yeah.
And because you never know if your opponent, if you show up. You know, given your B game and your opponent comes in with its A, you got a chance to get beat.
Yeah.
And the thing is that I feel like it's frustrating for fans who watch it. You know, you would hope that your team's ready to come with its A game every game. It just doesn't happen. Even if they think that they're in the right space mentally and that they thought they prepared and everything was good and they show up and they're just flat.
Yeah.
They don't know why, but it's just part of playing so many games over the course of the season.
Yeah.
And the challenge or maybe the objective now for Nebraska is how do you learn from it so that you figure out, okay, what happened for leading up into Rutgers and during the game and why Rutgers got back in and why we weren't able to find a way to win it. What happened there, let's make sure it doesn't happen again.
Right. And I think what's frustrating to some fans is, I completely agree with you, you're completely correct of like, think these things happen. Good teams lose to bad teams. Yeah, this happens.
Yeah, yeah.
But this was supposed to be the Nebraska team that didn't do that. You know what I mean? And like again, even some great teams down, you know, like Villanova, right? They lost to Creighton that year. Probably shouldn't have, right?
No. They should not have lost.
And
it
so, like, Creighton even great teams
last year. No,
even great teams lose to not as good teams. I think what's frustrating for some fans is like this was. This is supposed to be the peak year for Tim Miles. And even in this year, they lose on the road to Rutgers.
I know, but
I think that's what's frustrating.
That to me seems unrealistic.
Sure. No, I mean, you're not incorrect, and the fans are not
incorrect.
Right.
Because the only teams that are not going to take on a bad loss this year are probably like Duke, Virginia.
Yeah.
I guess Michigan State, Gonzaga, Tennessee, probably, although they almost lost at home to Alabama. That's not a bad loss.
I think part of it though is it's Rutgers. That's the thing where it's like you can take a bad loss to like Illinois because you can convince yourself, well, Brad Underwood, or you can lose to Northwestern or Penn State and be like, well, I can see this or that. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that it's Rutgers and they are like the unpopular kid at the lunch table for the Big Ten, and so that black mark looks even worse. You know?
Yeah.
So what does Nebraska do to fix it? I don't know. I really don't. I think Ohio State is a good opportunity because. Ohio State's, again, lost four in a row.
It'd probably be a good thing if we're recording this on Wednesday, so Ohio State plays Purdue tonight.
Tonight, yeah.
So maybe a good thing if Ohio State won it to get some positive momentum. I don't know. But maybe, I don't know, maybe sometimes it's better to play a team that's just like, maybe I don't think that they would check out under Chris Holtmann. He doesn't seem like a guy who would lose his team. But, you know, if they have totally lost all their confidence, yeah. then you can get that win. I mean, that's kind of what happened against Indiana, it seems like.
Indiana, I don't know what's going on there. When you can't get Romeo Langford to play hard or Juwan Morgan to care,
I think Juwan cares. I don't know if anybody else. They also can't shoot. Indiana's like...
They're the perfect NBA team. Because there's been a couple times when like they just see a guy running back on transition. They're like, he'll get a dunk. I'm fine with him dunking on me.
So maybe that's what you need, just to play some teams that... Sometimes we talk about this as like when you play teams matters more than like, are you actually good?
Yeah, that's true.
Or are you actually better than that team? It's about the timing of the game and when it's scheduled. So... Nebraska's been a team that's performed better at home than on the road, and now it's got a chance to play a lot of home games.
Yeah, and they got a ton of quad one games in front of them, ton of them. And again, that's why it was confusing to me that it was such a bummer after Michigan State. It's like, guys, you guys got Purdue and Wisconsin and Michigan and Michigan. You get this Michigan State team again.
Yeah.
Iowa might be a quad one game. Like, there are so many quad one games in front of you. This isn't the end of the world.
Right. Yeah, and you kind of wrote about that after the game, how disappointed the team was for not being able to get over the hump against Michigan State. And yeah, you're right. It is kind of surprising that it lingered. And perhaps if they had played, perhaps if it was Ohio State next, it would have been easier to kind of shake it. But
yeah, or like, and the other thing too is like that record strip was bad in every way because they couldn't leave.
Mm.
They had to bus to Philly. And then the plane was late. They didn't get back to Lincoln until 5:30. And they had to, like, theoretically go to class the next day. Wow. And, like, that trip could have taken a toll. But, again, this is a fork in the road where, like, you beat Ohio State, and then who's after that? You beat Ohio State, and then...
is it Wisconsin?
I think it might be Wisconsin after that.
And then maybe a road trip to Illinois and then Maryland at home and...
Ohio State, Wisconsin, Illinois, Maryland, Purdue. This is an important stretch because...
Is the Purdue game at home or
Purdue,
on the road?
Purdue's on the road. That's their toughest game, I think, right now. And then they have a couple.
Although Maryland's
totally winnable games.
I feel like Maryland's tough with the matchup, and then Wisconsin with Happ inside is scary.
Yeah, I mean,
as well.
None of these are going to be easy, but they're winnable, right? Like I can absolutely see beat Ohio State, beat Wisconsin, beat Illinois, and everyone's like, we're back, everything's fine. And then you go to Purdue, or you lose to Maryland, lose to Purdue, and it's like everything's horrible, you know. But this is going to be a roller coaster, I think. It's not going to be as easy as maybe we thought it was going to be a week and a half ago after the Indiana game. But again, this is a fork in the road where this season can turn around and they could go on a run and they can get a bunch of quad one wins and everything's fine. Or we can continue to talk about job status if they keep losing. Like that's basically what we've got in front of us.
Yeah, and because the league is so compacted with talented teams, like if you do find something that clicks, you could end up sort of catapulting upward in the standings and then obviously putting yourself on a winning streak, kind of like the way Maryland did. I don't think into Big Ten play, people thought Maryland was the third best team in the league, but then it won five games in a row, and it's like, I think Maryland's the third best team in the league.
Right.
And then Maryland loses big to Michigan State, and now, you know, we don't know. And maybe Maryland drops a couple games in the next couple weeks, and that number three spot is up for grabs. So things can change pretty quickly, I guess, is the thought.
But. Yeah, you're right. I was also thinking, I meant to do this. I'm pretty sure the circle of the Big Ten is almost complete, where everyone's beating everybody.
Oh, yeah, the Big 12 has that circle.
Yeah, the Big 12 does. The Big Ten doesn't yet, because Michigan State hasn't lost and Penn State hasn't won. But I think everyone else, there might be some sort of circle.
We'll root for that. When that happens, that'll be a major talking point on this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Chris. A shortened pod this week, but that's all right. We'll hit you guys up again next week. Anything change? Creighton, Nebraska, if they played today?
Yeah, Nebraska wins by like five.
It's funny how like it does kind of get closer. I also have Nebraska. Nebraska wins. It'd be fun to see them play again. Can they play twice a year?
If they played yes! Here's what they do. The last game of the non-conference and the last game before you go play conference games.
Yeah.
Or conference tournament.
Yeah, just some like the Big 12 SEC's got a challenge this weekend. Like, can we get just the...
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Big East, Big 10 challenge to happen.
The Big East, Big 10 Nebraska-Creighton challenge.
Yes, really, it's just Nebraska.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.